Our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we have JSON-LD and HTML, which will be moved a little further down on the agenda until we get more people on the call. Finishing up the review of Sandra Hawk on the JSON-LD syntax spec, then going over David Booth's JSON-LD syntax spec review, and then Charles Greer's JSON-LD syntax spec review. And then finally, JSON-LD options, how base is applied, and then the, detailing how expansion compaction, the explanation should work in the spec. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda? All right, let's go ahead and get started. First up is Sandra's syntax spec review, continuing that. Marcus, would you mind go ahead and picking up where we left off last week, or just any of the remaining issues that need to be discussed there?
Yeah, sure. I'm just opening the issue. Do you remember where we?
Let's see. Unfortunately, I still don't have the minutes from the last meeting up yet. I was going to do that after this call.
Well, I think we discussed that little table having describing the overloading of keywords, so basically add vocab and add type. I think that was the last one. So the next one is the use of add graph to denote the default graph. And Sandra finds that confusing, and he also proposed an alternative way to achieve that, and the way he did it was to have, so in an array you have one object which just contains an add context, and that context is then reused for the following objects. So you don't, so the scope is not in the subtree, but how do you say it, in the siblings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the problem is that if that could have odd effects down the line, if you had multiple values of a property, one of them with a context, the other one without a context, you would think then that that context would apply to the subsequent things that are in that array.
Yeah.
I think if the only way that would make sense, I think, is if you had an object which contained only context. Because then I think that's the only way you could really interpret that. It wouldn't have any meaning otherwise.
Well, I think we actually discussed this as a possibility a really long time ago. Something else that's very frustrating trying to use something like this is if you're working with the data in compact form, you can't easily check like lengths of arrays and things like that. You have to go through and look at the whole array to make sure there's not a context in there. When you're just doing, you know, regular programming on a compacted piece of data.
I mean, so it sounds like we're a... Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, we had that question several times now, but I think, at least in my opinion, it's not that common that you have an array at the same level in JSON. And there are even some circumstances where that's a security vulnerability. So
well,
in general, you have something like just a data property, and then you have all the data stuff, or the array as value of that data thing there. And, I mean, you can easily alias that data to add graph, and then it's there. So it's just that when we expand, we always transform that to an array at the top level. Otherwise, I think... it's always an object otherwise.
I think there's probably a lot of interest around considering a canonical representation of JSON-L to be a flattened representation, be it still compacted. And in the HTML, JSON-LD and HTML stuff, which of course I'm sure everyone knows is influenced by I think that's actually something they see as happening when they're getting in the, maybe if we give them a reasonable alternative, but the use of that graph there is really, I think they really don't care for that. And they think it's not going to be well understood by their community, but an array of objects would.
Well, I mean, if you look at almost every web API out there, there is always an object at the top level, even if that object is just an at data or at response, without that, of course, just a data response property. And then they raise the value of that property.
I agree with Marcus. There are very few examples of having an array as the top-level thing that's given back to you.
Well, I'm wondering if then, instead of trying to create a different keyword or something, if we just recognize this and show a usage pattern where we alias graph to, or data as graph, so that it can be used in that way.
Yeah, maybe we should mention that in that specific example.
The other option would be to introduce keywords such as that data.
Yeah. I think Sandra's comment is mostly based on unfamiliarity with how JSON is used in the wild. I do think that he has a point there. If you want to use JSON in the way that he thinks people use it, but I haven't seen people use JSON like that in the wild that much. I don't think we need to do anything about this other than to clarify the example. But even clarifying the example is kind of, I don't think it's necessary for people that write JSON on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we can just take that graph out of the, is it possible to just take that graph out of the example, Marcus?
Well, not without taking the whole example out of it, because it doesn't make, I mean, the example doesn't make any sense without that graph, because then you don't have multiple objects at the top level.
Right. Typically, I'd expect to see something like this in, like, a result, a search result, JSON search result. So you do a search, and then you get a bunch of results back.
Well, but then typically you have a top-level object where you say how many results you got back, next
That's right.
page, and that kind of stuff, and then one property which then really keeps the results.
That's right, and I think that's my point. So maybe what we do is we just put context at the top level and just, rename graph to results or result, and then there's no
mean,
there.
Within the context, create an alias in the context that does that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would at least show people how that pattern would be applied, and hopefully it would clarify it a bit to Sandra.
And that's a bit dangerous, I would say, because then it's not really the default context, the default graph anymore, if you have other properties.
I'm not suggesting that we add other properties. I'm suggesting that we just change add graph to just result.
Okay,
but that might cover things up too much. Personally, I don't think that this is something that we really need to address in the spec. I think it might be confusing to some people, but
Maybe it's worth adding a note that we are specifically looking for feedback on the use of graph in this case.
Sure. That sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let's move on to the next one.
So the next one is about data indexing. Sandra feels it's a bit weird, but pretty harmless, as he puts it. And he's proposing that instead of having that special at index feature, that we can index data by an arbitrary property. Yeah. So the problem there is that the value of a property can be, well, anything, so not just a Boolean string. So if it's an array or something, you can't use it as a key, obviously. And, well, we discussed that before. It basically adds a lot of complexity. And with data index, you explicitly express what the index is, even if you duplicate some data, but it's purely for, well, representational metadata, I would say, whereas the other thing is it gets more complicated. So I would say we do nothing here. I think having arbitrary properties as indexes is too complex, at least for 1.0.
I agree. Craig, Longley, any other thoughts on this?
No, I pretty much just agree with Marcus there.
Yeah.
I know that we also didn't. I remember one of the requests for this feature didn't want to have the RDFA data actually be in the index. It was supposed to be staying out of it. So it's simpler and it sort of meets whatever use case there was.
The only thing that I worry that we're missing, because I've seen it actually come up a couple of times, is sort of the other pattern from these indexes, where you have a sort of a top level key in which the data is contained, which basically contains an array of properties. So the microdata JSON is an example of this, where you basically have something like ID at the top, and then you've got, I think it's properties, and then the value of properties is basically all the properties. So it would be a case where you might fold those in. I recently saw that again when I was looking at some of examples, and I, you know, of course, I think it's too late to start addressing more things, but I'm just a little bit concerned that we're going to wish we had that.
I think the reason for that is because they don't have any way to namespace properties like we have, so they have that special properties property for, well, avoiding clashes between links and properties, for example, or
In the microdata case, I don't think so, because there's really nothing else in there in the object except the identifier and properties. Unless, of course, the identifier key itself could be reused, and that was what they were thinking. My concern is that, you know, microdata is something that we had at one point thought that we would be able to handle through some of these mechanisms. It didn't work out. And we never really talked about it at any length.
Yeah.
I agree, Greg. I think that it would be a shame if we couldn't make microdata just JSON-LD right off the bat. But I think we're a little too far into the standardization. I mean, we need to get the last call in.
Yeah.
That feature could take, you know, even if it takes us 3 weeks to get that feature.
I know.
I think we can. I'm hoping that we can add it in the future. I'm hoping it's an extension that we could add maybe after we get to rec with JSON-LD 1.0. Yeah, maybe there's a way that we could update indexing to make it backwards compatible as well. Because we're fairly strict.
There's always the possibility to just have a simple pre-processing step or something. And especially in the case of microdata, it's trivial, extremely trivial. So.
Yeah, okay. So let's see, what are we doing about this one?
Nothing.
Nothing, okay.
Yeah. Then the next point Sandra raised was the data model section. So he said he found it very confusing, and even though he's very familiar with the RDF data model, which I don't really understand because the sentences have almost been copied from RDF concepts. It's just that I always added that JSON-LD graph instead of RDF graph, etc. And yeah, so he even asks whether we could just drop that section, but that was actually a request from the RDF working group to put it in there. So I'm not sure what to do about that. I mean, one thing I thought about recently was that instead of redefining or defining our own data model, we could also just say the data model is RDF's data model, for example, but we don't place any restrictions on where blank notes are usable, for example. So at the syntax level, it doesn't matter. You can use blank notes and graph names, property names, as identifiers, etc. And that's really, I think, the only difference. But
true. I think we say it more eloquently, though. I think we explain the data model far more eloquently than the RDF concepts document does.
Yeah, it's much more concise and, yeah.
The other thing is, yeah, you're right, the RDF working group asked us to put this in here, so we're not, I think we're gonna create another avalanche of discussion if we take it out at this point, especially because so much work was put into making it so that the RDF working group was okay with that text that they asked us to put in there. I don't really... You know, I think the reason Sandra might be getting confused about it is that he knows too much about RDF, and he's not taking the text at face value. But again, that's just kind of trying to get into his head, which is probably not a good thing to do. Personally, I think the section's fine as is. I think it's short, concise. They asked us to do it. And we've gone to a great length to make sure that it is what most of the other people in that group wants.
Yeah.
So I guess this is another do-nothing, unless anyone disagrees.
I would say so at this point, yeah.
Okay. Okay, next up.
The next point is about the labels, normative, non-normative. We discussed that already. Then there is one turtle example, which I think he just misread or something because he said we don't show the at prefix declaration, but we do that in the context. And then
Do we not show the at prefix declaration in the turtle?
Well, it's in the turtle, but I think he said that we don't do the same in JSON-LD, but it's there.
Okay.
I have to
Hold on one second, Marcus. I'm a bit lost. You said in Sirius here, I'm reading, these labels seem to be applied inconsistently.
Yeah, that's about normative and non-normative sections. We discussed that already last week.
Okay.
So what is the example? Is there an example number for
the
turtle?
Yeah, I'm looking for it. Just a second.
Maybe it's down in D1.
It's example 62.
Yeah.
Here's the link. Oops, without local.
I don't think there's anything wrong with this.
Yeah, I mean, we define the fof prefix in JSON-LD and do the same in Turtle, so I think...
Did somebody fix the auto-go-to issue with respec?
Is it working now?
Yay! That's awesome. Nope, it didn't. I just loaded it again and it didn't.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Oh.
When it's cached, it works. Because the ID doesn't exist when you load the document. It's
right.
Rebrand.
I just thought someone created a navigate to thing. So that, you know, that's the fix to it. It's just, and all of us know that's the fix to it. It's just none of us have had the time to go in and fix it. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I think we don't have to do anything here because, I mean, it's what we say in the stack, and I think it's quite obvious that we define a prefix in both Turtle and JSON-LD and use it.
Okay.
And then the last point he raised, and that's a serious point, is in the IANA considerations, we have those profile IRIs. And Sandro didn't understand to what the should applies. So is it, that you should use that IRI if you request expanded form, or is the should that you should label it if you return expanded form? I think it's both, and you can use it for both. But yeah, and he said that it should work as normal content negotiation works somewhere. I can't find that now, but somewhere he said that as well, and well, it's basically the same. I mean, it's an optional parameter, so of course, if you aren't able to expand it on the server, you just return it unexpanded, for example. But that's the same with MIME types in general. If you don't have a matching MIME type, you are free to return another MIME type. Mm-hmm. So I think it, at least from my point of view, the text is clear because we say
Marcus. I think it would help if we explained a little bit more in that section what should happen. Like basically, put a note in with Sandro's concern where we basically say, look, if you request expanded form and the server can't expand it, then the response should not include that profile URL to say that it's expanded form. Does that make sense? I know that's basically, that's how it's supposed to work, but if it's not clear to Sandro, then it's probably not going to be clear to very many other people. I can see why he's, I can see why he's confused about it.
Yeah, I mean, we could do that, but we also have the link to the profile spec, so, well, I mean, it wouldn't do any harm to add a sentence or two, of course.
Right, yeah, that's my thought on it. Okay. Any other thoughts on that one? There's one more down towards the bottom, isn't there?
Some references are out of date, like 30TR, and the reference style is incorrect. I mean, that's something we have to fix before going to last call. I didn't bother to do it now, especially because Turtle changes state continuously.
Turtle hasn't changed since CR. I mean, it will change.
Yeah. Well, it was last call, not CR.
Well, that is the way that specs go, ideally.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, so I guess, is Turtle going to be a wreck before we go to wreck with Jason LD?
Well, it certainly is on a faster timeline.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, we've been trying to finalize the whole test case reporting stuff. It's not. Mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of work left on that, but I think it will likely go be a recommendation before Jason LD is.
Okay. Then what we could do is just mark it up as a wreck and then note it as, you know, hey, Turtle isn't a wreck yet, but it will be. Or actually just make the reference, name it Turtle TR recommendation, Turtle TR recommendation. Make the change and just be done with it, assuming that it's going to go to wreck before Jason LD does.
What about RDF concepts?
That I don't think is going to hit rec before we do.
Work is mostly done on it, so, and it hasn't really been changing. There have been some requests to deal with B-node scopes in there. That's the only thing that I've seen that might put a change in there. But there is that open issue that we discussed the other week regarding the treatment of the default graph
right. When
retrieving the documents.
Well, anyway, these are some very small editorial changes. I'm not so concerned about them. So we can just leave it as is.
They are all just informative references.
So even if they're informative, it's even less of an issue. Okay, well, we'll just try to fix it up before we go to last call.
I think RDF concepts is a normative reference in the API document.
Hmm, that sucks.
The RDF transformation stuff directly calls out to it for describing what the various different things are.
I guess it's not so big of an issue because it's in the same working group, and we can just say we'll park it at a proposed rec until concepts goes to rec, which it has to do for the RDF working group.
Okay.
So in the very worst case, the HNL, the API spec is held up for a couple of months while RDF concepts goes to rec. Okay. That's all of Sandra's feedback? Is it, Marcus?
Well, awesome. Not really. He sent a second email. And the second email is basically about the conformance section and pushing the RDF conversion to the syntax back.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to move the algorithm. I think, though, he wants to have a perhaps more of an informative description of the process of turning JSON-LD into RDF and vice versa, which would require a brief description of the expansion and flattening algorithms.
I'm not sure I like that, to be honest.
Yvonne had made a similar request, I think, some time ago that would like to see more, you know, the one place where you can go and understand how this JSON-LD represents RDF and generally how RDF can be represented as JSON-LD.
Yeah, well, I mean, currently it's implicitly in the whole syntax spec. I mean, it's how nodes are identified, how graphs are labeled, how the context works, etc. So it's all there. It's not condensed in one section, but I think it's there.
Yeah, I tend to I agree with Marcus. I don't know what we could do really to make I don't know how you explain that. I think that the whole in a way the whole document, as Marcus said, the whole document is about that. In having a section that says, well, JSON-LD represents RDF and this is how you do it, it's kind of what the whole document's about.
I don't think you'd have to do that, but we could say something like, the general process of transforming JSON-LD to RDF involves expanding and flattening the document, and then basically turning each resulting block into a resulting set of RDF statements. And at that point, it is the only thing that's at all complicated in there is list expansion. But it's the same. It's virtually the same as it's done in every other spec.
Well, but as soon as we do that, then people ask, how do you expand, how do you flatten?
Well, I mean,
you reference
the API, yeah. Same with that, but it provides a general strategy. I mean, expansion is the process of eliminating the context by expanding everything. Flattening is the process of taking, chained results and moving them down to the base representation. So it's all you almost need is a paragraph and then a example of the before and after, which we probably already have for expansion anyway. I don't think we do for flattening. And once you've done that, you can almost say, well, and through example, you can see that the resulting turtle from this JSON-LD is pretty much a one-to-one transformation of the individual elements that are in there. For details, see the JSON-LD API.
As long as we can keep it to a couple of paragraphs, I think that's fine.
I think that's sort of what he was asking for.
Greg, do you feel like you have a fairly decent idea of what you'd write?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
Where do you think probably in the how it relates to relationship to RDF?
Yep.
Yeah.
I would say so. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Cool.
Thanks,
and
Greg.
The other thing is, Sandro proposes to add to the conformance section something like a JSON-LD expander, JSON-LD compactor, JSON-LD to RDF converter, or JSON-LD from RDF converter.
But I think it's probably useful because I can imagine that not everyone is going to implement every algorithm, or certainly won't implement the API per se.
But this is about the syntax spec still.
Yeah.
So say that again. So this is about the syntax, you said?
Yes. He proposes that for the syntax spec.
Yeah, those things have only to do with the API. So I don't think that the syntax... I forget what's in the conformance section, but... doesn't sound like something that should go in the conformance section.
Hmm.
Well, currently in the conformance section, I think we just define JSON-LD document if it applies, if it complies to the grammar. And
yep.
I think that's enough for the syntax specification.
Yep, I agree. So no change?
Well, I would prefer to not change that yet. we could talk about having JSON-LD expander, compactor, etc. in the API spec, but I wouldn't be comfortable with having that in the syntax spec.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. All right. So that is all. Those are all of Sandra's comments. Is that right? Question one. Question
yes.
two. Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll, of course, hear if we have not addressed all of his comments. There are quite an insane number of them. And thank you, Marcus, for going through them and organizing it and updating the spec and keeping that conversation going with him. That was a huge, huge help.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, David Booth, JSON-LD syntax spec review. There is not much we can do for David, I feel. Don't scribe that, but it sounds like David Booth's argument is basically the thing that we hit in the very beginning with JSON-LD, which is people wanted a more direct triples-based expression of JSON, of RDF in JSON, and that's just not what JSON-LD is. The other thing is about the data model not being a superset. Okay, so let's go down these one by one, I guess. Marcus, would you mind just driving the conversation so I can scribe?
No, sure. So his first point is that JSON-LD should be an RDF syntax, just as Turtle is an RDF syntax, which means that it should have exactly the same data model as RDF and not be a superset of it. And it should have the same semantics as RDF serialized in any other syntax. So, basically that's about the blank nodes as graph names and predicates. And I think that's, as far as I know, the only distinction to RDF data model.
I think it's probably worth noting that in this regard, we're not too different from notation 3, which also allows for blank nodes as predicates. We do also allow blank nodes for graph names, but notation 3 doesn't have that same, it has an even different concept. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think what he describes here about trying to change the RDF specification itself first instead of talking about these changes in JSON-LD would be the ideal situation, but there's disagreement, so we're not in that situation. That's all it really boils down to.
Yeah.
He's asking to change the RDF. Sorry, I'm trying to capture what you said, Dave.
He isn't specifically asking to change the RDF spec. He's saying if these changes are to be something that would be embraced by RDF in the future, then the changes should be made in the RDF spec. However, there's disagreement over where the future is going to go here. And so since that disagreement is there and we want to have these features, it has to go somewhere. We would prefer it to go into the RDF spec, but it's not happening right now.
Marcus, you were saying?
I think we discussed that several times, and there are, not even the RDF working group has a clear position about that. Some people would like to have, for example, blank nodes as properties, or that graph labels denote the graph. So I think reopening that discussion again isn't really productive at this point in time. It's a superset, we discussed that with the RDAP working group 6 months ago already. They accepted it. We clearly document the differences in the specifications. So, I mean, we can't do much more. And I think we would like to keep JSON-LD as it is.
Agree. Any disagreement on that?
Nope.
Okay, then his second point is that JSON-LD should not require that IRIs are dereferenceable. So that should statement in the syntax spec shouldn't be there. Which I find a bit odd because JSON-LD is about linked data, and I mean, linked data is all about dereferenceable IRIs, so it wouldn't make much sense to remove that statement there.
Yep.
And I mean, it's not a must, so if you have good reasons to not do it, you can, of course, have non-dereferenceable URIs, but you should have good reasons for having our eyes fixed on the new reference, and that's all that should assess. So it's,
yeah, I agree. No change.
The specification should be defining JSON RDF, not JSON LD.
Yeah, I totally disagree with that.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't. It's a different spec.
Yeah. okay, so hold on. I just want to make sure that we all agree that we don't need to change that should to a may for IRIs, saying that IRIs should be dereferenceable.
I don't see the purpose. I don't even know why we would mention saying may. If we were going to change it at all, why say anything? But I don't think we should change it. I think it's very important that it not be a must, and it already isn't, and should is the only other thing we can say.
Yeah, I think we had these conversations quite a while ago, and nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Except his desire. It does strike me, though, that the name JSON RDF and perhaps the corresponding MIME type application RDF was JSON would be something. If it was a shame if some other specification came along and grabbed it. And you might consider that there is a publishing profile of JSON-LD called JSON-RDF, which sticks directly to the RDF data model, and that application/RDF+JSON could be understood to represent this publishing profile.
Well, I don't think RDF is such a strong brand.
I agree. That's the real reason. But I think we can. I think Greg's point is also valid in that if we had named it JSON RDF, we would have completely conflated it with the actual JSON RDF spec.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Of course.
I know when I was doing my first version of JSON-LD, I was thinking, well, application JSON before we had discussed it, I suppose. But then I found that was grabbed by RDF JSON,
yeah,
which is you know, it's still out there. It was a mistake on their part to grab a top level MIME type for that purpose.
So it's application RDF plus JSON?
Yeah, it would seem like that is something. There's everything else. Well, that's not true, I guess. It's application turtle, application and triples, application RDF plus HTML, application RDF plus XML. The fact that those both are basically a format that is layered on top of something else is pretty much similar to what we are, application LD plus JSON. But you might consider that we're leaving space open for some other representation of RDF and JSON.
Yeah. Okay, have we addressed all of his, or at least responded to all of his review feedback? It's basically an outright rejection across the board on his comments. But not because we don't, it's just because we've discussed them before a long time ago. And it's just,
yeah, that's all in his email.
Yep. Okay, next up is issue 230, Charles Greer. JSON-LD syntax spec review, and I have to admit that I haven't even looked at it. Has anybody else looked at it yet?
Yeah, I did, of course.
Yeah, I think most of the issues have been responded to, and he has responded back saying that he's satisfied.
Okay. Marcus, I'm not seeing any open check. I'm seeing one open checkbox on this. Do we need to discuss that?
Not really. I mean, he basically raised the same points as Sandra did in a lot of cases. I just replied to him explaining the changes, and he reviewed them and is happy with almost all of them. One thing he just replied today that he still finds very confusing is that at base, at vocab, and how they are used and how relative RIs are expanded, where relative RIs are expanded, etc. So he acknowledges that at base is marked as at risk, but he says, well, he still sees the risk of trying to do too much with expansion. The other thing was, well, mainly editorial, where we say so we characterize JSON-LD as a serialization of linked data in JSON, but, well, I don't know how to explain it because I'm not sure I understand him completely. So in his last email, he says that he thinks that RDF XML could have benefited from a distinction between you can author RDF in XML and there's a way to use XML for RDF interchange. So that has to do with flattened view of JSON-LD, which is, as he puts it, a high fidelity RDF serialization, whereas where you have remote context, for etc., for example, and compacted form, you don't really see that RDF, so it's not that obvious. And so he proposes, or he thinks that we might should say that it's one aspect of JSON-LD is a serialization, and the other use case is authoring. But I'm not really sure what to do with that.
So I guess it's mostly just making it clear that JSON-LD doesn't fall into the same trap that RDF XML did, in that the tree of information can be kind of repurposed or reorganized to match the application. And that's one of the uses, and the other one is just a straight RDF serialization format. Is that what he's asking for?
Yeah, well, he said that before he realized that we have a flattened form, he thought that JSON-LD has a lot of the same problems as RDF XML has, but flattened JSON-LD alleviates most of that because you can get a really deterministic form of the shape. So you get the data in a really deterministic shape automatically, which makes it easy to process it.
He was concerned that with all of the various ways of representing things in compact or expanded form with embedding and all those other ways of expressing the data, that it would be difficult for an application to find out where the data is that they want, And so once he got to flattening, he felt like that would eliminate all of those problems. But that really only covers certain use cases for how JSON-LD is used. He seemed to want to put flattening first, but I think that it sort of ignores the other uses of JSON-LD and sort of its strengths for using things in compacted form. And unfortunately, some of that also has to do with framing that we can't really talk about yet, since it's not in the spec.
Yeah.
I would just take that as I think it's really useful to have someone have made a statement like this, because the criticism that JSON-LD is making all the mistakes that already affect XML is something that's come up before. And I think this shows that one of the lessons we learned... Sorry, my dog is going off the record. One of the lessons from that is to specifically provide for transformations in there that allow the data to be modified without losing meaning, which RDFXML didn't. So I just take that as a useful thing to use in defending JSON-LD in the future from that accusation. I don't see it as being actionable.
Yeah, I think that's at least that last comment here was more editorial, because we have, like, the subtitle is a JSON-based serialization for linked data, then we have kind of the same sentence in the introduction, and again, in how to read this document. So I think the point he's trying to bring across is that it's not really that much about serializing data, but to augment the data with a context so that you can interpret it as RDF. And I think that's what he means by authoring instead of serializing.
Oh.
So you kind of like, you already have your JSON, and now you would like to transform it to linked data, and you do that by, well, zero edit, as we have that design goal. You just add that context, and then almost magically it can be interpreted as RDF, for example.
Yep, I think that is a very good, concise statement. I feel like we might say that in the spec.
If we don't, we should. It's very useful.
Yeah.
And it has a better explanation for what the purpose of JSON-LD is, rather than what David Booth was thinking with JSON-RDF.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the abstract and the intro. So we don't really say it that way, I think. So we might want to add one or two sentences.
Yeah, so let's add that to the abstract intro somewhere. Is there anything else that we haven't addressed to Charles Greer's?
No, I mean, that's it, I think. So the thing is, he's a bit concerned about the remote context, so that you can't really interpret the data without dereferencing the remote context. But, I mean, I think that's important, and I already started writing an email about that, but haven't sent it yet.
I think part of his showed
that it's important. RDFA has initial context, and without them...
The difference is that an RDFA document doesn't really lose its meaning, because you can't use an arbitrary external context, and the external context is not really, it's not mutable in the sense that it doesn't change the meaning of any information that's in there. Whereas in JSON-LD, an external context could change, which would mean that a document that formerly had one meaning now has another meaning, even though its MD5 signature might not change at all.
Yeah, in a sense, the document itself is not complete, but
Perhaps a way to address that is that if that is a consideration, then authors should inline their contexts and not reference a remote context, or just nothing at all. But I think that is the heart of his concern, is that document could reference an external context to change, but the document, the timestamp on the document doesn't change, nothing else about it changes. So how would you know that the data that it represents had changed?
Well, one way to do that is to run it through the normalization algorithm and add a hash as a property of the graph.
But you do that, and so what would that mean? If I am a client and I'm doing HTTP caching, so I do a, would that mean that you'd have to use an etag which was based upon, that included that normalization, and then the server would need to rerun?
It gets pretty complex.
Yeah,
you could do it like that.
So,
I mean, obviously, it would be a much easier recommendation to say, put the actual context in there, dereference the context and include that, if that's a concern.
Yeah.
But there are alternative ways to solve the problem. And, we, in all the pasteform work that we do, we link to a remote context, but we have hashes in the documents. And you have to run it through the normalization algorithm to check that hash. And you could do the same thing with an etag.
Yeah. I don't know that I really want to keep adding something to the document to represent these things, but is part of a response.
That it's not an objection, it's just something that,
yeah,
what did you say, catches me up. It's just a bit worried because that the whole mass XML got in with catalogs, as he puts it. But I think that's the same. That's always the same. That's the same if you include external JavaScript files, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
You could also. I was going to say you could also just hash the context and include that. That's another way to do the etag if you want to avoid normalization.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to avoid that problem if you want to, but in most cases the problem isn't really there because you have control over your contacts, so you change them in lockstep. And the advantage of having a remote context is bigger than, outweighs the problems, I would say.
Yep. Okay. Okay, are we done with Charles Greer's input then?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do we do with David Booth's thing? Do you send him an email with feedback or?
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I mean, we have to send back to say that we haven't, you know, we read through and discussed his comments, but we are not making any changes to the spec because he's asking us to make changes to a different spec than Chase Penalty, effectively.
Yeah.
But I can send those comments to him. Okay. We'll move on to the next issue, which is issue 223. Todd, we might have discussed this, but I don't remember. So the question is, what overrides what base? Does base set in given via the API override at base, or does at base override the base set by the API, or some combination thereof? There were four proposals in here, and it seems like we have. We have some. So proposal one is just not going to fly, I don't think. Proposal two has a bunch of. Well, it has weak support. Proposal three, Dave Longley, you disagreed with pretty strongly. And I think the rest of the folks agreed. And then proposal four, I think is proposal four, Marcus doesn't necessarily agree with. Nicholas, you also agreed with proposal three. So let me define. So it sounds like the discussion is between proposal three and four. Do they propose the same thing?
Yeah. So the question here is whether at base must be an absolute RI, or whether it can also be a relative RI, or if we have something special, which is an empty string, which is neither a relative RI nor an absolute RI, it kind of means that there is no base.
I don't think it makes sense in general to use a relative RI for base. If anything, doing something that allows the expression of relative IRIs within the document is useful. And I think that's where sort of the null or empty string things we're going towards. But otherwise, excuse me, I can't think of an example where I specify a base which is not an absolute IRI externally. Now, within a document, Turtle, for instance, allows you to set a base which is a relative I, which then the various base statements become accumulative. And theoretically, we could do that within JSON-LD. I don't know that that is a very important paradigm, though.
Yeah, just the thing is that HTML, Turtle, and some other serializations, they all support relative base RIs, and the empty string is interpreted as a relative IRI. So having the empty string as to say there is no base is a bit weird, in my opinion. And that's something I think should be done at the API level if you really don't want to have a base. Because the use case is to not change relative RIs during expansion, compaction, etc.
Okay, Nicholas, you've been on the queue for a while. Sorry.
No problem. I'm trying to think of. I basically think that I think the same way as Marcus do, and specifically I'm right now looking at the XML base specification. In general, what we should do is to make this work exactly in the same way as base is treated in HTML, XML, and Turtle, because I expect them all to have the same logic, the same resolution mechanism, and we should take care to ensure that this does the same thing. Unfortunately, I don't know them by heart, so I can't really say if we're on the right track. My impression is that proposal 3 is closest to this, at least.
Well, so the only difference between Proposal 3 and Proposal 4 is that you can't use null to reset the base IRI, and you can't use an empty string to indicate that there is no base IRI. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that...
So if Proposal 3 is close to what everyone else is doing, then the only difference would be that we would, if we were to adopt Proposal 4, we would have two extra features. So otherwise it would be compatible if you're not using those features.
I'm not concerned about null, but I'm concerned about the empty string, because that's completely different than everyone else does it.
Yeah. Because in every other situation, the empty string is just the current base IRI. Whatever that is.
But the empty string would be a relative IRI, which would be disallowed in every other situation, wouldn't it?
No, they are allowed, typically. So in HTML, you can have a relative base. In XML, I don't know. But in Turtle, I think you can have that as well.
Well, then Proposal 3 is not the same as those other proposals, because it does not allow relative IRIs.
So it sounds like we have general agreement to align with what HTML and Turtle does. So, and I guess XML-based, but we don't necessarily know what that is right now. Is that true?
Yeah.
I just checked HTML, and their relative IRIs haven't been allowed for a long time, but the browser started to accept them, and I think now in HTML5 you can have a relative IRI. But up to HTML4, it had to be an absolute IRI.
Yeah. I think that if you have the base given with the keyword in the context, then it's relative. I would expect it to resolve against a base given as an option. So say that I have a document fetched from example.org/something/other, and the value of the base keyword in its context is slash something, then I would expect that to resolve to become example.org/something.
Yeah.
Say that again, Nicholas, please.
I'll try to type it out.
Yeah, let's type that.
Right. So in that case, I'm guessing that the API would pass in the base. I guess the API would pass in the base URL, which would be example.org/sum, and then we couldn't do simple text concatenation. We would have to basically do IRI. We would have to basically, process that as an HTTP IRI.
But that's what we do with base anyway, right?
What is the behavior if the API sets no base when this happens and you get a relative base IRI in? Because we don't want it to be that the same behavior as, the removing dot segments results in a bunch of IRIs that are essentially garbage. It modifies the data in a way that we don't want it to happen. If you have relative IRIs in the document that say ...... and you have no base, and then you get a base document in that has a relative IRI, how does ..... get changed? Does it become slash? Because I don't think that that's what we would want to have happen. I think people would not be expecting that.
Well, I would say that it happens the same way that it happens with any other RDF serialization that can express this. And my guess is that this is one of the cases where as I recall, whenever I join segments, IRI segments, using my library, it results in the IRIs being normalized. So, which includes removing dot segments.
But in RDF, you aren't even allowed to have relative IRIs. I mean, you can have them
you can have them in a
serialization, but
exactly. So you could construct this example with Turtle, for instance, and you would have some result. I don't believe that there's any test for this in Turtle, but there. I mean, my Turtle processor would provide some behavior. In fact, I think you could actually run it on my distiller.
I think if you aren't able to establish an absolute base by either using the API or at base, we shouldn't try to resolve relative IRIs in the document. So we just leave them as is.
Well, we'll be the only serialization format that I think has really tried to go this far in describing exactly what happens. So if it hasn't been necessary for anyone else, I'm not exactly sure why we need to be spending a lot of time on it.
Because we define an API where we have a base option, and we allow that to be null.
It also matters for normalization. If we don't define what happens to these paths, then different processors will do different things with them, and the hashes between two different things are not going to match up. They're not going to have the same meaning.
Yeah, I think we have to be pretty clear on this.
Relative RIs, should you?
Well, maybe it just argues that if we specify a base IRI in the API, it must be an absolute IRI. And in the absence of it, you would potentially be left with a document that has relative IRIs in it. But that would be true. That would be true for any other serialization format as well.
Well, I think it's important that we say if you specify no base, what is the behavior? Do we leave all IRIs alone, which seems like that would probably be a good idea? But also, what do we do if base does exist in a document and base is relative, and you've specified no base in the API? So we've got a couple of cases that we need to actually define what happens.
If the base is specified in the document, and it's Oh, that's a tricky one. If it's relative and there is no base in the option, I don't know.
Right.
Otherwise, it's afterwards, yeah.
It's obvious what you do if base is absolute in the document, but if it's not and you have no base in the API, what is the behavior?
I think in my case, it is unaltered.
Well,
to look at my code in particular.
To break the document because you lose the base, but you don't alter the other IRIs, and as soon as you change the base, then I mean, even if you store the expanded document in exactly the same location, the IRIs would change because the base was relative, and
so,
you didn't take that into consideration.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we take this back to the issue tracker and cover every potential thing that needs to be clarified in the spec, in what we would like to see in each one of those cases, and then ensure that those are aligned with the way that HTML and Turtle and all those other languages do that type of processing, or at least find something that has the least number of caveats against those other representations, because I don't think we're going to figure this out on the phone today.
True. We should test some tools like libRDF, the command line tools, to see if there is some consistency. I'm leaning towards something like if there is, like we could leave something out in the case of relative base in the document and a null base or no base given in the API. That we just say this is undefined, that processors may deviate. Otherwise, we should specify that it should be the current location in the file system, and if that's not possible to compute, you should use localhost slash or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's get this down in the issue tracker, because there are too many variables, at least for my head, there are too many variables.
Yeah.
So we need to just write all this down so that we have a fairly, so we know that we're covering all the issues, all the bases. Anything else on this issue before we move on to the next one? Okay. Issue 226 is expansion and compaction. The expansion and compaction explanation is inaccurate or misleading. I think it was suggested that we pull some of the explanation from the from the JSON-LD API spec into the JSON-LD syntax spec to clarify this. Is that where we were on this issue? Oh,
sorry,
unicorn.
I have this down at the moment. I can't.
Looks like it hubs down. Anyway, so without being able to see the issue, is that what?
You know, we're getting close to the end of time. Maybe we should talk about the JSON-LD and
right.
HTML.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's up again, but
yeah, let's switch really quickly to JSON-LD and HTML because that's more important than. Greg, you want to take us through the proposal here?
Yeah.
Try not to say the name of the company in case we need to not say.
Right. It's actually, unfortunately, GitHub's still not. Well, maybe it's coming back. There are cases where expressing metadata within HTML using either, say, microdata or RDFA is not feasible or has been shown to be error prone. So as an alternative way of doing this, the idea of JSON-LD and HTML is basically to adopt the mechanism that is in the Turtle specification for being able to embed JSON directly within a script tag, and then a processor which conforms to this, which does not necessarily need to be an RDFA processor or a microdata processor, would extract the content of that script and then run it through the algorithms. It is, I specified it in terms of extracting RDF. It could easily be said to extract anything. Maybe being vague is better. But the, of course, the use from Turtle is for extracting RDF, and I think that is the use that is intended. As in addition, there is a strong desire to be able to specify, to not require boilerplate within the JSON. So to be able to take JSON that someone might have, I think Yvonne described some use cases of this where the JSON comes out of a, say, a representation of resources that you might otherwise consider doing some HTML templating to add it into the HTML. Instead, you could just take the JSON and insert it directly within a script tag without adding context, which would be considered boilerplate. Certainly, if there are multiple objects that might otherwise be represented in an array form. So because it's not feasible for us to add an attribute to HTML, even though it's somewhat contraindicated, we express this using the data context attribute as a way of equivalently specifying an external context in much the same way it would be done with a link header. One of the advantages of data context is you don't have to be very explicit. As long as dereferencing that IRI can result in a context, you can, for instance, use redirections in the case that, say, trailing slashes are missing, or that through content negotiation you might be redirected to some other location of the context.
Any comments on this, on the feature in general, and then on using data context? Split them into two separate issues. Is there anyone opposed to putting this into the spec, I guess, is a better question to ask.
Note that it is considered to be an informative addition.
While I sometimes wonder the same thing as Marcus did about the actual usage, I've seen some possible uses. For instance, you might want to extract RDFA, but then have some extra data in there, and you will work with JSON-LD. As we've speculated, might be a path forward instead of an RDFA API. It might be nice to have this complementary information in JSON or something. So I think it's a good thing, and it's a nice, since Turtle has this, it's a nice sort of isomorphism with that spec, since that will be released at sort of the same time. And
so I have to say that when I added support for this for Turtle, I did it generically by basically using the type to look up a RDF serial parser that I have in my suite. So right now, my own system, if it encountered this minus the data context bit, would actually extract the RDF and add it to the default graph. Now, in this case, it would just add the default graph, but so it's basically a pattern which has some history to it.
Yeah.
I actually thought it would be a useful feature for web applications to get them some initial data to start up.
Yeah.
But in that case, you would normally put that into a variable somewhere.
That's another way to do it, is you put it in JavaScript and assign the result to a variable. But this is an equally valid way of doing it.
The thing I don't really like is that that context is put somewhere else, the context reference. There are a couple of reasons for that. One is that you can't copy and paste that data to the playground, for example. The other thing is that the proposed data attribute is not really intended for such a use. And the third reason is because we explicitly say in this spec, if you have the MIME type application LD plus JSON, the context has to be in the document and not referenced by a link header, for example. And if we introduce that, we are ourselves inconsistent with that.
Well, there is a sentence specifically allowing that in the section, but yes.
Yeah.
I just have to say that...
I didn't understand the last bit you said, Marcus.
Well, we have the section interpreting JSON as JSON-LD, and there we say if you use the MIME type application / JSON, you use the link header, or you look there for an external context. But if you have application LD plus JSON, the context has to be referenced from within the document and not via link header, for example.
Well, we might consider removing that.
Or adding
you could also just put... I was going to say, you could also just use application / JSON if you're going to use the data context property.
That makes it imprecise, because it could. How are you to know what variety of JSON it is?
Whether or not the context attribute appears on the script tag.
But the data context, which is also specified as local to the web application. So somebody might already use that somewhere.
Right.
It's possible, but if they already use it on a script tag, I'd certainly be willing to hear some other alternative. I had originally suggesting using vocab, but got a fair amount of pushback about that because there's a difference between the meaning of vocab and the behavior of vocab. Also, vocab is not usable in HTML unless you sort of invoke the RDFA. Profile,
yeah.
And in this case, this isn't intended for use just with RDFA.
And specifically, just a remark. Okay. If vocab was to be used, I'd expect it to be used as vocab and not as context.
Yeah, but except vocab does sort of have that behavior because the vocabulary in expansion is dereferenced, and it is brought in order to affect the meaning of the document. So it really does have, in the sense of its behavior with vocabulary expansion, quite similar behavior to context.
Well, I wouldn't really agree with that because the difference is that vocab is used just as a, it's used not with profiles which we took out of RDFA, it's only used with the semantics of RDF schema and OWL, which could be used here instead as well. So they're not really isomorphic.
Yes, no, you're right, and I don't want to belabor this. I'm not suggesting we use that, but I don't think we can create a new attribute, and there are no other attributes that are defined on type in HTML that are appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that there aren't any other alternatives here. I mean, we end up either reusing an RDFA attribute, and none of the RDFA attributes, you know, work with this, and you would also have to make sure that your document is an RDFA document to use that attribute. I think what we might end up doing is wording it and saying that this is a design pattern. This is currently a design pattern, and it's non-normative, so it's up to, you know, implementations to implement it or not. But if it does gain traction, then we will. Make it an actual rec. We will make it normative, and when we do that, we can then add another attribute to HTML to make that happen. But that's only if this gets, you know, widespread acceptance.
But I mean, again, why can't we just use the at context keyword in within the JSON as we do everywhere else?
They consider this boilerplate, and they have a strong directive against requiring boilerplate. Now, you might say, well, but isn't it boilerplate to put in the script tag? However, I feel quite strongly about this, and I think if the alternative is they create their own variation of JSON-LD, then we lose. So it seems like a fairly small concession, which is in the spirit of how we specify it through a link header, that I think it's a reasonable thing for us to do. I have asked the people that have been promoting this to be more vocal, come online. It hasn't happened, but hopefully it will. I think if some of these issues are raised on this and the RDF mailing list, then that might provoke a response.
My fear is just that we now say you should use that data attribute, and then people don't use that, or even in this case isn't going to promote that. So you end up having JSON, which isn't JSON-LD, but you label it as JSON-LD. And then we end up having the same problems as RDFA had with Facebook, for example, where the prefix definitions were missing. And at some point we end up having a situation where we need either to define prefixes or predefined terms to resolve that problem again. Because at least from my point of view, it's exactly the same boilerplate. Of course, that's subjective, but whether it's inside that script app or as an attribute of that script tag, which is even longer, or characters longer, I can't really see a difference. And you can't simply copy-paste it, and et cetera. There are a number of issues there.
I think that is a very valid fear, and that's also very concerning to me. That, like, are the people that are going to create tools for this going to assume a certain context? And if they are, then we are going to be forced to put that make that like the default context in the future. I think it's very, very dangerous to do that. So I think if we're going to put data context in there, people have to process it. They have to use that value. But again, there's no way that we can force implementers to do that.
Well, especially with data context, that's an attribute that is local to a web app. It's even intended for such cases where you could drop it or where everyone can do something different with it.
I think so. The thing that matters is that if somebody doesn't put data context in there, they just have regular JSON, then it's just not going to work. And I think that whatever these large implementers need to make sure that happens, because if they don't do that, then we're going to have this initial context discussion in JSON-LD. And the problem is that in these large implementers, it is not in their best interest to make sure that developers do it, because they want their initial context to be the standard initial context. So I think
that's what worries me.
Right. So this is. I totally agree with Marcus. We're in very dangerous territory here, and I think we need to have a couple more discussions with them to before we put this data context feature in there.
Well, I will. I think maybe we'll see if we can get to join. It might be a topic of discussion tomorrow. I don't recall if it's on the agenda or not. But I will suggest that he perhaps try to come in to help defend this. Because I said at the outset that I can't really defend this. They did have another one that I've I have not pushed forward, which is a something like a synonym to ID, which would be at rel, which they want to use. And I've suggested, even though using things that look like keywords as aliases is discouraged, it's something they could do within their profile.
Okay, so could we, we're, well, 10, 11 minutes over. Do we want to go ahead and plus one the support for this, but keep the decision on data context undecided for now?
Yes, maybe two separate polls on that.
Or just not have another poll and kind of have a discussion with them before we...
Well, and the question is, should we add something to the spec? Should we add at least a portion of my proposal to the spec?
Okay, so the proposal is add the JSON-LD in HTML feature to the JSON-LD syntax specification without support for data context. Okay, so add the JSON-LD and HTML feature to the JSON-LD syntax specification without support for data context. We can definitely add that, right?
Yeah.
We'll clarify to say that we're still discussing data context and the dangers that it poses to us having to create an initial context mechanism.
I think you should have that sentence in the proposal, so it doesn't sound like we're firmly rejecting.
Okay, we're still discussing data context and the danger of it forcing a JSON-LD initial context.
Just to throw my opinion in here, I'm not too sure that feature, since we're looking at it and we're saying that boilerplate is not that different from just putting at context in there, if that's true, then the exact same problem might happen even if we do force them to put at context in there, if they might not do it. Mm-hmm. And you still end up with the same issue. So I don't really know if we're actually solving anything either way.
Well, at least we are not proposing something new and label it as JSON-LD.
Yeah, but I don't know what that at least really gets us.
Okay, let me put the proposal in here.
I can add the data context as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead and do that.
Well, I would prefer to leave it out of the spec at the moment, at least.
Okay.
I guess the one... benefit of putting it in the spec now is that we could point people to text and say point to something and say this is what we're discussing and it's at it's an issue rather than just leaving it out. I guess we could always point them to the issue tracker, but it might help people kind of understand it in context in the spec. That said, I don't feel strongly about putting it into the spec.
Yeah, but I don't like the feature, so that's why I don't want to see it there.
Okay.
Yeah, ultimately it's going to come down to how important it really is for them, and if it's really a make or break thing, then I would not want to see them go off and invent their own variant format.
No, but at least right now it's us four people knowing about it, and I think Andy asked on the RDF working group who that company is. So they should.
Yeah, everyone knows.
One email.
Everyone knows who it is.
Or something.
Yeah, I agree. But they haven't done this much in the past, so
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe
we should definitely keep quiet about who it is because. But
I'll note that one of my examples happens to use. Of course, we use in other places, but.
Yep. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the we talked about allowing context as an optional parameter to the MIME type a long time ago, and I think we decided not to use it. But perhaps it might be allowed in this shape. I'm not sure if it's if it's a bad path to
go down. You mean to add it to the type attribute?
I think a lot of authors are going to just mess that up.
That will get messed up. However, that is a way to do it that doesn't involve, you know, it's worth going back to. But it would require that we add such a parameter to the MIME type.
Yeah, and we didn't want that earlier.
Well, we felt that link was a better way to do that, but that's only appropriate in the context of an HTTP envelope.
To some extent, there is value in that because you might want to ask for a specific context in certain situations.
Let me send that back to them and see what kind of response I get. All things considered, I would rather see them include the context within there, and just using if they always defined data or something that's perhaps less dangerous than just data as an alias. That would also serve the same effect. It is boilerplate, but it's a pretty minimal amount of boilerplate.
Yeah. The one risk with the MIME type parameter is that, if I recall correctly, those parameters have to use, after the equals, a quote, which looks really strange within the attributes.
I'll look at that.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
We are 20 minutes past. We should definitely end the call. Anything else before we leave?
What's the timeline for the syntax spec?
I wish I knew at this point. I mean, I'm hoping now that we have all the issues or all the comments addressed that we can update it, finalize this JSON-LD and HTML feature, and then tell the working group that it's ready for last call.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully another month and we're in last call, but who knows what that's actually
like. Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear if it comes up tomorrow. Because the whole working group's way behind, even on its extension, and this isn't helping. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone, for the call. Have a good week, and we'll chat again next Tuesday.
All right.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.